Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Luktak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The first series of shows has been a general overview of the big picture of debt in four stages: pre-debt, before we take it on; two, the comfortable stage of having debt; three, the slippery slope; and four, the abyss, where one is facing financial ruin or bankruptcy. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. And as always, if possible, get a notebook and pen for later on in the show to take notes to help with the educational story in your own life and how to redress it. In the news this week on debt and related issues, Delta Airlines loss ballooned in the first quarter to $6.39 billion as the company took a non-cash charge of $6.1 billion, reflecting a decline in its market value as sustained record fuel prices take their toll. Delta reported a loss of $130 million in the year earlier quarter when it was still in bankruptcy. Excluding special items, the airline lost $274 million, or 69 cents a share. Delta recently announced a deal to merge with Northwest Airlines. Tennessee is the number one state for bankruptcy filings in the United States per capita, and it has been reported that a main factor contributing to that rank is gas prices. Gas prices in cities like Chattanooga are about $4 a gallon now, which is now the national average for regular gasoline. Obviously, since Americans depend on gas to do about everything in their lives and get everywhere, the rising prices are hitting all aspects of the economy hard. Also, in states like Tennessee, another issue is the unaccredited programs that promise to help people get out of debt, which are popping up everywhere. These are actually suffocating a lot of people. These 800 number advertisements are often scams and are taking a toll on the average American who is strapped with debt. Guy Caruso, who is head of the U.S. Energy Information Administration, told a congressional committee that oil prices are likely to remain above $100 a barrel, which he said means consumers can expect gasoline prices around $4 per gallon through next year. In the short term, Caruso said low-grade gasoline prices are likely to reach $4.15 a gallon in August, but are unlikely to decline much after the peak. Premium grades and diesel will likely top the $5.50 a gallon mark. Peter Asiavati, the credit analyst and managing director at JP Morgan Securities Inc., said home prices may fall another 25% to 30% over the next 4 years, with greater drops still in the subprime mortgage debt markets. So this is affecting everyone who owns a home, regardless of whether or not they are currently having problems with their mortgage. Some good news: the Securities and Exchange Commission wants the credit rating agencies to publicly disclose the information they use in rating mortgage-backed securities, including information about the underlying mortgages, to provide more transparency for investors and other rating agencies. This is a very good thing, quite useful to have transparency so the average consumer can understand more about what's going on across the board, including any investments that they may have. In an interesting article by Professor Elizabeth Warren, she looks historically at the credit card lesson, what had happened in the credit card industry with respect to interest, and how that is now possibly affecting insurance. She indicates that the effective repeal of usury laws, those interest ceiling rates, in the United States was accomplished historically in the quietest possible way. So, for example, in 1978, the Supreme Court interpreted a century-old banking law to determine that federally chartered banks may lend to people in other states so long as they complied with their home state's usury rate, so their ceiling rate for interest. It wasn't long until the chairman of Citibank paid a call on the governor of South Dakota, who had a new high ceiling interest rate passed in South Dakota. Now, with this, the Citibank was free to charge whatever it wanted, and all states lost the right to protect their own citizens because they had to compete with Citibank, and this meant that they had to allow their own banks to follow suit with Citibank's high interest rates, or their own banks would be in trouble. So the bottom line of all of this is that the consumer is hurt because of this decision. Now it seems that a number of congressmen want to borrow this idea for use with insurance regulation. We're seeing this as a very slick way to deregulate the insurance industry. So, for example, one state could be South Dakota again, can change their insurance law and sell their products in all other states, even if those insurance products don't meet the local standards for care. In other words, just as exporting interest rates became a way to deregulate credit cards, exporting health insurance licensing can be a way to deregulate health insurance. Now, this is a scary idea, and we have already learned this lesson with the credit card industry and the seemingly sky is the limit interest rates that are now happening. So in insurance, the regulation of health insurance often covers rules that govern whether people can be denied insurance for pre-existing conditions or whether insurance must cover certain kinds of events or treatments. In many ways, insurance regulation tries to balance the fact that an insurance contract is nearly impossible to read or understand, even by educated people in this contract area like we attorneys, who have a tremendous difficulty understanding a lot of these contracts. So for laypersons, it's nearly impossible. This question of when regulation should be at the state level and when it should be handled federally has been around since the founding of the Republic, but changes in the past 30 years have shifted the terrain quite a lot. The failure to provide minimum federal protection has combined with the state race to attract businesses to strip consumers of much of the protection they once had. Now, it is certainly true that people can believe that deregulation is the way to go, whether it be for usury protection interest or for insurance regulation, but what we need is a discussion in that regard and not just a behind-the-scenes decision without a vote in front of all of the people. This is an important consumer protection, and we want to make it clear that what happens is based on the consumer's intentions and not just the big business's desires to manipulate the consumer in yet another travesty of pulling the wool over the eyes of the innocent backed by government lobbyists. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Now, the next thing I'd like to do in today's show is to get involved in a recap of last week's show. We're in the comfortable stage of having debt, and we are devising a strategy to make it so all people can have a short-term and long-term successful financial program, even though we're not the upper class of a rich person. Also, at the onset, I would like to again give credit to Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors. Many of the thoughts, ideas, examples, and theories are derived from their works and books, including All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap, which I highly recommend. What I emphasized in the last show is a way to get your bare necessities in tune by looking at certain things that you can cut if you're using more than 50% of your net income for your bare necessities or must-have things like your home and insurance payments, those kinds of things, your automobile payments. So we want to cut the easy stuff first, and we were looking first at insurance because insurance has a lot of areas where we can cut. Most people are paying too much, way too much, and they don't question this. We have said that you should be shopping every 2 years. You get multiple quotes from at least 5 providers and go back to your current provider and negotiate. You dicker, ask about discounts and get package deals on insurance for home, life, car. Altogether, these can make your insurance premiums go down, which is important and a great savings. Another issue is that if you've had bad credit rating, as your credit rating improves, you should reshop your insurance because with that, your insurance premium rates should go down also. And an important rule of thumb is to switch immediately. You don't have to wait to do that switching. You will get premium rebates and you could stop that higher premium and get some rebate. Another point is you don't have to take on any of these add-ons which you don't need. These are usually things that are useless extras that increase your premium but don't really give you a lot of benefit. We also discuss getting rid of insurance that you just don't need. Sometimes you have insurance that is not worth the money or just a plain ripoff. For example, credit disability insurance, also known as credit unemployment insurance from credit card companies, which is expensive and gives flimsy benefits. You just get to skip some payments when you're sick. That's not really a great benefit for the premium cost. You'll just get a bigger bill down the road. The interest is not usually suspended. Another kind we discussed was credit card loss protection. This is generally a scam, which the FTC agrees. Your credit card is lost or stolen, you are already protected by the law. You don't have to pay beyond $50, so don't get insurance for that kind of protection, which promises anything more. There's also this identity theft protection, which is generally a scam, and credit card companies are trying to market this a lot, and in fact, no real benefit is being offered. Another area is the specialty kind of insurance programs, particularly life insurance programs, for example, for kids who don't have any income, they don't have any dependents, so why do they need insurance? It would be much better to get a college savings plan instead. Another thought is the cash value insurance, also known as whole life or universal insurance. This is life insurance with a savings plan attached. It's very expensive, and you lose control of your savings, usually high agent fees, and so it is not wise to get this kind of insurance. Instead, get term life insurance and invest the difference on your own. Another type of insurance we discussed was mortgage life insurance, which pays off your mortgage if you die, but usually costs 3 times or more than ordinary life insurance, term life insurance with similar benefits. So if you have the money, just buy more life insurance to pay off the mortgage and leave some for your loved ones if you were to pass. Cancel that mortgage life insurance. Another suspect kind of insurance is accidental death insurance. That's life insurance with a twist. Your beneficiaries only receive it if you die in an accident. However, only 5% of deaths are from accidents, so you're paying a premium against the odds. Another thought is if you have life insurance but you don't have any dependents, you may want to rethink whether you even need life insurance because no one needs that money for their care. And then the last area was this odd kind of insurance for extended warranties, termite pest control, traveler's insurance for accidents, even alien abduction insurance. These are usually unneeded, really scammy kinds of products, and they're overpriced and frankly a waste of your money in most cases. Another review area for your basic necessities or your bare necessities is reshopping your mortgage if you have a mortgage on your home, but you have to be very careful. This may be the biggest opportunity to save money, but it's also one of the places where you could lose your home if you get into dangerous territory. You have to be alert and look for cheating, and if the last 3 or 4 years is any example, you might even have to presume that there's some cheating, even with big name companies. You have to be very, very careful. My golden rule is you need to hire someone to represent you, even for a refinance, and make them explain the paperwork to you. They're not just there to say sign here, 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 and there. You need to get an explanation of what these mortgage terms mean. If they're not willing to do that, find somebody else. Also, you should arm yourself before you even call to refinance. There are some basic rules. You arm yourself before you call by getting your credit report, knowing what your credit report is. You can get free credit reports from Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion one time per year. And as I suggested in the past, if you go online and try to do it, you may be waiving some rights and having to go into arbitration. So you may want to get those through the mail, at least have them send them through the mail without waiving your rights. A second thing is to clean up your credit report yourself. You don't really need companies to do that. You look for errors and notify the credit bureau immediately in writing about errors, and there's a lot of common errors in names, social security numbers, account not really even being yours that are listed under your name, bankruptcies that are more than 10 years old that aren't taken off, other negative information which is more than 7 years old has to be taken off, credit inquiries more than 2 years old have to be removed, missing notations for charges that you had disputed, closed accounts listed as open. These are all things that are possible errors, mistakes on your credit reports, so look out for those. It's a fact that 1 out of 4 credit reports have serious errors on them. You also need to be prepared with your financial information, with pay stubs, bank statements, tax returns. These are important documents, and if somebody's willing to do a no-doc transaction with you, I would suggest that they're also willing to take more money from you than you should be paying. You also want to arm yourself with your current mortgage balance from your current statement or a payoff statement, which you can get from the bank or online. And then an appraisal of your house. What is it worth? How much equity is in it? The more equity, obviously, the better interest rate you can bargain for. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. The second rule of thumb is get multiple quotes. You should get many quotes, 4 quotes, 5 companies, before you quit getting quotes. There's lots of information that you can get from having multiple quotes. You get a great comparison, you see the range. And if, in fact, the quotes are all over the place, then we suggest that you get some more quotes because that means that there's something rotten in Denmark and you want to have the best possible, most accurate kind of situation before you commit. The time that you spend, the effort that you take, is really worth it because this is the greatest savings that you can have in your bare necessities if you are in this refinancing situation for your mortgage. It really can help you come up with a lot more money to work with during the month that's left over. Another point which I've raised before is that number 3, remember the mortgage broker does not work for you. They often get more commissions from the lender if they talk you into getting a mortgage with a higher interest rate than you qualify for. There are kickbacks here, and by steering you into a bad deal, they get those kickbacks. And unfortunately, in many cases, it's actually legal. A recent study at Harvard Law School showed that borrowers who went to mortgage brokers paid on the average $1,000 more than people who went directly to the mortgage lender. The rule here is that you get quotes from different brokers and different lenders. Both of them can attempt to finagle money out of you, but many sources means a better deal will eventually emerge. Keep that in mind. Keep asking questions until you are sure you have the best deal. It takes time, it takes effort, but the more quotes, the better off your refinancing package will be. Point number four is something I see happen all the time. Bankers and brokers try to get people to borrow more money than they actually need to refinance the current loan. This is taking cash out of your home equity and taking on a bigger mortgage. This is not smart. This is very dangerous for most people. This is a loan. It is money you're going to have to pay back. It's going to be something that you will regret later on, almost always. You are effectively taking away your savings, and if something does go wrong in the future, you can lose your home if you're not able to make some payments. And this is something that you will greatly regret. Do not let the bank talk you into taking more debt in your refinancing loan. Just don't do it. Point number five is watch out for fees, points, and other fine print. There's lots and lots of traps in these particular kinds of deals. In the refinancing deals, it's like landmines covered with leaves, and a lot of it's legal, but it's there. You have to sort through it, and you have to make sure that you understand what's going on. So what you want to do is ask some basic questions, which I will give you now. Question number one is, what is the interest rate? You can go to www.freddiemac.com and see how the interest rate that they give you compares. Unless you have really lousy credit rating or you were in a recent bankruptcy, if you're going to be paying more than the average interest rate that you get from freddiemac.com, this is probably a bad deal. Do not go for it. Question number two is, how many points are on the loan? A point is a 1% fee of the total amount of the loan. So each point is 1%. In the general rule of thumb, if there's more than 1 or 2 points, this is not a good deal and we wouldn't go for it. In fact, in most cases, we don't want to have a loan with any points, but this is how the brokers and the banks make money up front. The third question you want to ask is, what are the closing costs? You want to get a good faith estimate from the lender and use in comparison shopping with all the lenders. If the fees are too large or if the range is too wide that they give you for their estimate, like they say it's between $100 and $5,000, then of course that is a bad deal. But this is a good basis for comparison shopping. The next question you would ask is, how long is the payoff period? A typical payoff period for a mortgage refinancing loan is probably 30 years. Some banks now are trying to get people into 40-year loans or interest-only loans. You're not paying down any principal with those, of course. You should run away from these loans. These are not good ideas at all. 30 years is a good idea for most people. And if you actually have your current mortgage being extraordinarily short, a 10 or 15 year mortgage left, don't extend the payoff period. Try to get a mortgage for 10 or 15 years because that will, in real money, give you the greatest gain. So you're actually refinancing to your advantage, not to your detriment here. Another question is whether you're going to get a fixed or a variable rate mortgage. And generally, we say that a fixed mortgage is much better. A fixed rate mortgage is much better, unless you're really positive you're going to be moving in the next 5 years. And when you get an adjustable rate mortgage, known as an ARM, which is a variable rate mortgage, never get one where the rate changes in less than 5 years. These, unless you're an investor with sophisticated knowledge of the markets and you're flipping houses successfully, you are really setting yourself up for a grand failure here if you are starting to get these kinds of ideas in your head. Do not get an adjustable rate mortgage for less than 5 years. Question number six, is there a balloon payment? Balloon payment means that at some point, 10, 5, 15 years down the road, that you have to pay off the loan. If yes, generally you're not going to take that. This can eventually cost you much more down the line than you are gaining from the refinancing. Question number seven, is there a prepayment penalty? If the answer is yes, then just basically forget that loan. You're giving up your own rights at a great cost, and it really is not to your advantage to take a loan like that. Question number eight, is there a yield spread premium, sometimes called a YSP? This is industry speak for basically kickback for getting brokers to steer you into a bad deal. Obviously, you want to walk away from this kind of loan. The next question you want to ask is, do I have to take out private mortgage insurance or PMI? This helps you in no way at all. It helps the lender. It's usually required when there's less than 20% down, but you may have equity in your home that's more than 20% or even close to it, and then they should waive the PMI if you have good credit. Ask the cost of the PMI if it is a must, and if it's single premium PMI, run away from that loan. You're going to be paying upfront for 5 years insurance, and you may even be selling so it's earlier than 5 years, so you are putting yourself at a great disadvantage. And the last rule is if you are over 60, Afro-American, Latino, or in some minority group, these groups are targeted for higher priced mortgages. You need to shop harder because these are the groups that get all the extra fees. And so the studies have shown that high income people in black neighborhoods are charged more for their loans than low income people in white neighborhoods. So you have to be very careful if you're in one of these minority groups. This is not right, it's not fair, it's not legal, but it's real. So you need to protect yourself. Use the phone to make contact more so they can't see you. Get quotes from banks outside your minority neighborhood. And of course, you need to get a lot more quotes so you can protect yourself and your family. And the final tip for the week, if you are not able to pay all your bills on time, you are in trouble with your debt and should seek out professional help to cope with the problems as early as possible. Delay almost always makes the problems worse. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I am speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt-manageable life.